A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Rob?
I'm feeling saturated with information because now we've been in lockdown. It's just like constant information about all different things. And it's not even necessarily related to the pandemic itself, because I guess you can choose to log on to the news sources, you know, at times.
Yeah, I've kind of taken a break away from it. I was full on when it first happened, and now I've sort of taken a step back, and
I have too.
Clearer headed about living.
Yeah, because I think otherwise you can get really obsessed with it and you kind of end up just easily living through the news 24/7.
Yeah, pandemic wormhole.
But something I've noticed is that people are bringing up a lot of social issues on Instagram. And one of the things I noticed today is there's an organization or a group on Instagram called I Weigh, as in like the weight of your body. And people have been, who run that organization, are posting photographs. And they were talking about body image and this idea of the pressures that we're all being put under during lockdown to exercise loads and to sort of keep up the fit body and to like, you know, be doing like 10 yoga classes a day and like
That's all this true stuff. Yeah.
And about how it's triggering people with eating disorders or anxieties to sort of feel bad about themselves when we're already feeling bad enough as it is. And it just made me think a lot about all these external information sources we have now and how it's a constant sort of thing that's being put on all of us. And because we're often working, I don't always think about it as much. It's a bit more like a subconscious thing. But I think now that we've got more time, I've sort of been analysing it a bit more. And it brought me to the work of the guest who we're going to meet today, because her paintings are inspired partly by popular culture and also the figurative paintings of women. And they explore different facets of like race, sex, culture. And I felt a connection to her work in this time, because I think it's really a positive way to think about all of those external forces. And I know that you've been following her for a long time as well.
I think exactly what you're saying. I think it's the characters in this artist's work are all very pro-body. They're all very confident. They're all very proud. It's a very, they have an energy that is, it's a confidence. It's a strong confidence that goes through it, which is why so many people are drawn to the work. And I think why this artist is having such a kind of meteoric, fast-paced rise to with attention all over the world, really. So, yeah, no, we're really excited to have on the show today, Talk Art, please can we welcome Samaya Critchlow.
Hi, Samaya.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah.
Where do we find you today?
I'm just at home. I'm sitting kind of at the table, got all my books around me, and the sun is coming in. It's really nice.
You're in London, right?
You're in London.
Yeah. I live in London, and I was living with my partner at his mum's house, so I've just moved out into my own place for the first time. So I'm enjoying it.
How is that? How's leaving like the mum and the partner to be by yourself? Is it helping with work,
or
is it?
The partner's with.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, no, it's really nice actually. It's like very much welcomed, because I kind of put it on the back burner for a while to focus on art, because London is so expensive and, you know, there's a lot going on. So it feels really refreshing and nice to, especially at this time when there's a lot going on and, you know, everyone's on top of each other. It's I'm really enjoying it.
So you were born in Britain, but a lot of people might think that you're actually American, because I came to your work through an American gallery called the Fortnight Institute. And and also you've had lots of shows in America. And recently there was a Marion Boetsky group show, a figuration group show, which you were in. And I think people wouldn't realise that you're actually British, which is great. I mean, brilliant for us. Brilliant for us if you're one of our exports. But how comes that, because you're still quite young and you've only recently sort of graduated, the experience of the American galleries, how did that all come about so quickly?
I studied at the University of Brighton, and then I did a postgraduate, and like you say, I didn't finish too long ago. And I happened to meet the gallery that I'm working with now, and it just came about that the first solo show that I did kind of through them in partnership with another gallery was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to happen quite organically and make sense. Mm-hmm. And so I think kind of that starting off there, things kind of grew from that. And I mean, I visited America and stuff when I was younger, New York, but not a lot. So it's quite interesting. And yeah, I do get a lot of people messaging me and they think that I'm in New York, yeah. which is, I mean, I don't consider it, but then, yeah, because I know where I am based. But I think there's a lot going on in America at the moment. Yes. And I think like the way we see ourselves and kind of the imagery that we look at, I think there's a big conversation going on over there, and probably just having the show start out in Chicago led the path for, I don't know, it's all been very organic. So.
Yeah, no, it feels like it. But the title of that show was called Time Never Mattered, which I need to thank you for, and Rob is a big fan. But you've got me into the music of Kodak Black, because that's from taken from a lyric from a Kodak Black song, right?
Yeah, I'm presuming you've now listened.
Yes, I want to say thank you for that, because I'm bopping around my flat listening.
I was already
to that.
A Kodak Black fan, because I obviously first learnt about him a bit before Cardi B got really famous, because she did her kind of Kodak Yellow. Oh, sorry, Bodak Yellow.
Yeah, Bodak Yellow. Yeah. To be honest, that kind of isn't, because funnily enough, like there was quite a strong influence behind the beginning of the work of this TV series called Love and Hip Hop. And there's like a whole bunch of, have you seen it?
Yes, of course. And that's how Cardi B came to all of our attention.
Yeah, so I kind of was watching it.
What, is it a reality TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of focused around like, I guess a lot of the musicians and kind of like celebrity culture in America. And it is predominantly like a black cast, which I like really enjoyed. And I used to watch it when I was at university. It's quite trashy, but in a really interesting way.
Yes.
And and Kodak Black, Time Never Mattered. I'm a huge fan of his music. I think he's a really interesting character. And that song, I find it very like soothing, and so it seemed to fit the show.
Well, you listen to rap music when you're working, right? That's, and you play it quite loud.
Yeah, I tend to listen to a lot of rap music when I'm painting. I don't know if I don't know. It's like when the Kendrick Lamar album came out, you know, the one that became quite big. And I remember listening to that, and that was quite a few years ago, and thinking, wow, this is like reading a book or a poem. You know, it's a whole story from start to end. Mm. And yeah, I think, you know, you subconsciously kind of like relate to things. And I don't know why, but I find that music, it does something for me when I'm painting. But equally, I'll end up listening to Jeff Buckley. You know, it's really all over the place. But I do think kind of rap and people like Kodak Black have a strong influence on kind of like how I'm interested in viewing the world and like different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, people come into your work will see that it's hugely figurative, and a lot of the characters are in it are, it's predominantly female, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think I've seen any male characters.
Yeah.
Yes. But these characters occupy like a hip hop culture or a rap culture. They seem to have this sort of occupy that world, I guess, from this TV show you've been watching.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a lot of the way it began, purely because I've studied all my life quite a traditional education of painting and looked at a lot of, you know, well, I guess when I was at university, it was a lot of looking at contemporaries and the YBA, and then initially, like, I've always been quite drawn to like old masters and then Velazquez and Manet and stuff like that. So there was this kind of discord between personal interests and things that I was doing in my personal time, which was watching these shows and kind of interested in hip-hop and the culture around it, and then also heavily involved with painting.
The juxtaposition of that, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of felt like I was like, oh, actually, well, why can't I put together what I love in terms of what I'm interested in alongside what I'm also interested in painting? So, yeah, I don't know what I was going about. But yeah, I think even though they're influenced by that, I like to think that there's a kind of openness to them, and that maybe it's more the way that we look at cultural reference points and we pinpoint them to one area, and actually they expand a lot further than that. Because I kind of found from watching Love and Hip Hop that they dealt with a lot of like day-to-day life things, be it like very dramatically, but it's like reading a great book or like a Jane Austen novel, you know, it's like over the top. Yeah, you know, you're like kind of watching people and how they relate to each other and how they interact with each other. And you know, you have like, if you have a falling out with a friend and, you know, on these shows, they always highlight that. But actually, occasionally I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, this has happened. You know, I don't know. So, yeah, I think there's like a lot of broadness. And I think also I think with hip hop and particularly like the female like Cardi B and Nicki Minaj and Lil' Kim, that they're such amazing and powerful forces, and they're kind of able to do what they want in a way that I don't often see black women kind of able to do, or even women in different situations. And I find that like really admirable.
So you channel them through into the figures, I guess. Their personalities come into your figures.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's like I was cleaning the bathroom because it's a new place, you know, giving it a real good scrub, and I was listening to like old Nicki Minaj songs, and I just felt really like it really brought me back to life. I don't know, that I just find them really great. And there's a Beyonce and Nicki Minaj track where they've got I've got to check what her name is, but this really famous feminist who wrote We Should All Be Feminists, I think it was. And they've superimposed her over the track. I don't know. You know, it's a bit cliche, but it works for me in one sense.
Well, Rob is the biggest Nicki Minaj fan and Cardi B fan, aren't you, Rob?
That's something that's quite interesting, though, to think about, because I think one of the things that sets those artists apart is also their incredible sharp kind of wit and incredible intelligence, because people kind of sometimes underestimate people in popular culture. And I think Cardi B is so intelligent. Like, and yes, she can be wild and fun and all those things, but I love that about her.
Yeah, no, me too. I think that's kind of the main thing, is that they really are so intelligent, and there's so much to their character.
So you've been working on a new exhibition, which is currently installed but not going to be shown just yet because of the pandemic. So what kind of led you to make those new works?
Yeah, so actually we didn't even get to installing it. We decided that it was, because I kind of designed the space more than I would do normally. So every other exhibition has just been the walls as they are, but we kind of made a whole inside design. So we decided it was better for everyone's health to kind of leave it for now. But that exhibition is with my gallery, Maximilian William, and it's something that I've kind of been working towards for such a long time. So it's a whole bunch of work that's been
worked. How are you feeling about that now? How are you?
It's very strange, because I've been working on it for about a year, you know, painting on and off in between other things, and then we were getting so close and it's kind of slowed down. It feels quite strange. Like, I know that there's this whole body of work that's just waiting to be seen or to show it, and it's like the biggest thing I've ever worked towards. It's quite a odd feeling. I'm really excited about that. So normally I work quite small, and this show is the first show that's got a combination of bigger paintings and much smaller paintings. And I think, I mean, the inspiration behind that, recently I've been very heavily involved with like more Renaissance side of things and going to the National Gallery a lot. And when I was in New York for the Marianne Boesky show, I went to visit the Frick collection. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've been, but I just love it. Like, I really loved it. And so there's quite a big influence of 18th century kind of Georgian
European. Yeah. It reminds you make me think of like European miniatures that when you started off in a smaller scale, like something precious you'd walk around with, like the love of your life in your kind of codpiece. That's what they make make me think of, the scale of them.
No, totally. They're kind of like, I mean, there's a painting that will be in the show when it does open, and it's a pair of slippers, and it kind of, it literally fit in the palm of your hand. It's that small. Mm-hmm. That the miniatures is a very European thing, and only like private painting or whatever.
Private painting, that's it. Yeah, they feel very private, like you shouldn't, there's someone else's belongings that you stumbled across and now you're having an exhibition of like someone's treasures that they've cherished and kept for themselves. That's the vibe. But then they're also infused with these period figures, with these kind of characters that are very contemporary but in a kind of period style. And that's what you're bridging.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really strange. Like from a very young age, I just loved like Victoriana and like really over the top kind of Gaudi. I don't know, like really love like Rococo, and I really love burnishings and things like that. So there's this weird combination of being very interested in that side of things and then obviously popular culture and marrying them together. Mm. And I think with the small paintings, that kind of came about because when I was younger, I used to go a lot to galleries with my grandparents, and we'd kind of discuss what we were seeing. And a lot of the old masters used small paintings as like preliminary paintings for larger paintings. So that's actually how I ended up getting to.
They used them as like a calling card, didn't they? They'd go around and go, this is the sort of painting you could have if you commission me, then we can do a bigger scale of it. I think that's why they were so small, a lot of them.
Well, also, for example, Rubens, like as an example, used to, because I'm doing a lot of the work starts from imagination, it began that I needed to kind of process how I would add volume and light to that. So to work on a small scale made much more sense and figure things out. And then obviously once you have a small version, you can make a bigger version. Mm-hmm. But I realized that I always naturally worked quite small, and there seems to be a thing about painting big. You know, people are like big paintings.
But you're going that way, aren't you? Yeah, that's the can you see yourself in like 4 years or a year or something having a big painting show?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I was painting big before the kind of work that I'm doing now, and I definitely think because painting partly is about, you know, learning and like working through things, and I couldn't stay at this size. I think I'd get bored, you know, on a technical level. Mm-hmm. So,
you want to keep pushing yourself. And actually, some of the newer works from that show that is yet to be put on, I really love the one with the butterfly and also the grapes, like those kind of like more like still life kind of works.
Traditional, quite traditional ones.
You've seen those. So those are yet to be seen. But, so the butterfly painting is actually taken from, I don't know if you know, there's an architect called Carlo Mellino. From Turin. And he was an architect. He made this absolutely gorgeous house. If anyone's ever in Turin, they should go and see it. It's really stunning. And I discovered that he used to take Polaroids of women. So he had, and it was really secret, and it was only discovered once he had passed away. And I think they're absolutely beautiful. And there's this strange thing about how he's presenting a woman, because they're obviously quite objectifying, but equally that I just find them to be really charming, kind of.
They
beautiful.
Knew they knew they were being photographed. They posed for it.
No, they knew, but it was there's that strange thing of it's a bunch of Polaroids that someone's kept to themselves. You know, there's that side to it. But so the butterfly is kind of taken from the interior of this house in Turin, and it correlates with another painting I did, which was in the show Role Play, which happened in December, and there was a small painting called Little Susie, and it's the first painting I done, which has an interior space around it.
Because normally your characters float in like an environment, don't they? Before this, before you've made like chairs and beds for them to lounge on and background, they normally exist in a colour palette.
Yeah, it's kind of been colour-filled backgrounds of of nothingness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all, like I was saying, I basically did a postgraduate at the Royal Drawing School because I wanted to be able to draw really unselfconsciously and just to kind of know what I was doing so that I could work from my imagination, because I'd been studying on my degree and, you know, like working from a lot of photographs. And I think there's a certain point that you just get quite stuck. Well, I was anyway, because you're kind of looking to the static photo to provide life. And I think paint is really alive and fluid. And so I kind of knew that for myself to be able to progress, I needed to go and not think and just draw from observation. So I kind of did that. And it meant then that I could translate ideas that I was having, you know, like you have a feeling about something you want to present.
Yes.
And I could translate that onto paper. And starting with the figure was enough.
Had the human form in your imagination and you're able just to play around with that, once you had that foundation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. And then kind of, I guess, over the past two, three years, I've built it up now and got to a point where I feel like, you know, getting better at painting and I can take on the surroundings and kind of introduce objects. And yeah, so that's good. Yeah.
And there's another object that you've brought in for this show, which is the hairbrush with the word eczema, and it almost like a kind of purple wig that's kind of in the background, or it could be smoke as well, but I think it kind of references the body as well. But can you talk a bit about that work? Because I found that really interesting.
There's a couple of works that are concealing an eczema series, it seems they are.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you hit it spot on there. It's a wig, but it could be smoke. And yeah, basically they're quite like personal paintings. When I first finished my postgraduate and I was really involved with this work, it's the first time in my life where I kind of had like an endless amount of ideas to play with. I kind of got awful eczema, like absolutely debilitating, terrible eczema. And it kind of ruled my life for about a year, and I changed my diet and my whole lifestyle, you know, like stopped drinking, did so much to change it. And I think it was just a way of me kind of like expressing what was going on for me, you know, it kind of like... getting it out. And you know, when you have eczema, you want to like scratch your skin off. And so what I found was actually using a hairbrush was much better than my nails. It's a kind of like gross amalgamation of objects and my personal experience.
So that's an autobiographical side to the work, and these figures must have you in them as well somewhere, or you want to encompass their fierceness.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it was what happens is, you know, I really love art and the history of art, and I really adore like spending time in the National Gallery. And so when I was doing my postgraduate, you're looking at a lot of historical art, and there aren't any people there that look like me. And I'm not like massively concerned about what I'm producing other than that I feel right about it. But to be so aware that there weren't very many women painted in a certain way, or black women, I just kind of found myself feeling a little bit alienated from the art history that I like really love, like on a technical level. So I just started putting, I was just like, well, I need to kind of see how I can fit myself into this. And there's all these things about like permission, because if you're looking at something as a way of moving forward and learning from it, if you don't see things that you can relate to in it, you start, I think, questioning what, you know, like questioning, is it okay that I like love and hip-hop? You know, does that have a place in kind of like higher, or does it fit into this canon of things in which I'm so well educated and interested in? So I think
for everyone, like if you're not, don't see yourself represented in culture or on any level, then it's like, then how are other people going to understand diversity if it isn't there, if it isn't being shown on the gallery walls or on TV or in film? That's why it's so important that is kind of represented, that you this is being represented, and that's your journey to your work. It's
yeah, definitely. And I think that's why it's like important, you know. Yeah, so I guess trying to bring in the biographical side and things that I was interested in is that, yeah, trying to like maybe blur the lines a little bit more between what's acceptable in one place and another. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But the works did start off from me basically having that experience of feeling a bit alienated. So I just decided to draw myself a lot, mm-hmm. because I've never really done that before. And I was like, oh, what kind of person am I if I don't even know how to like draw myself? And I think it was partly like facing up to myself and like mm-hmm. whatever was going on for me at the time. Mm-hmm. And so once I got to a point where I felt I was quite confident and comfortable with drawing myself, I let myself turn into a million different characters, and now I don't really think it is me. It's just that's where it started.
Wow. Can we talk about the characters' breasts? Because they're all they're all huge, and they all have nipples like bullets, and they're all very proud if they're out, or they're not if they're covered up. They're covered up quite skimpily, but they're all very chesty and very very proud of their voluptuousness. Where does that stem from? And you know, and I just want to add that it really reminds me of Lisa Yuskavage, her work, how her characters are so, that their breasts are so out front and they're massive and they're kind of like disproportionate to what the figure is, but they're so atypical to her work. Is that why are your characters so chesty?
That two parts of that, I guess. I think part of it is a bit of an F you, you know, like mm-hmm. I kind of was doing a lot of life drawing at the Royal Drawing School, and you are looking at naked bodies the whole time, but there seems to be this kind of version of nudity that's okay and it's like allowed, and then this version of nudity that's just not okay. And like I was saying, in Love and Hip Hop, there's a lot of women who do have these kind of crazy bodies. Like I can't say if they're a surgery or some will definitely be real, like they kind of don't seem possible. Mm-hmm. And I found that quite exciting to manipulate this idea that I was coming from the perspective of doing a lot of life drawing, and to actually be allowed to just create forms that seemed otherworldly. And yeah, I think Lisa Yuskavage I think she's an amazing artist. I have a lot of respect for her. And it's kind of a funny story. When I was in the middle of getting quite frustrated and started on this new body of work and drawing from myself, I was actually supposed to be in a class, and I kind of got a bit fed up. So I just thought, you know what, fuck it, I'm just going to go and look around some galleries. Mm-hmm. And I happened to catch her exhibition at David's Werner. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't remember what,
Is it Bad Babies? Was it that one? Or
no, it was just her first show in a while, I think. And it was at London, David's Werner. Yeah. I think it was about 3 years ago. Uh-huh, uh-huh. And I walked in and I was just like, oh my God, like this is incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, from leaving my classroom where I felt so restricted and frustrated, I just suddenly walked into this world that was just like, wow.
Yeah,
it was like there was so much permission for what was actually allowed. All the things I kind of been told that were wrong and that people don't want to see it and no one is interested in. And I was just like, I'm so interested. I'm really, really interested.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
And the thing is, like, I think what you're doing with your paintings is kind of what I alluded to in the introduction of this show, is this idea of, like, body image and about what society has subconsciously told us is acceptable, you know, for women, but also for men. And there's somebody else who I've been looking at a lot over the last few weeks since I've been in lockdown, because I met her very briefly. She's called Chidera Egaru, and she's known as the slum flower. I don't know if you know of her at all.
No, but I don't.
She's just made a documentary. I didn't actually see the documentary yet, but I think it was to do with body hair and about this idea that, like, you're told you're not allowed to have body hair, therefore women and sometimes men as well will, like, wax their bodies or whatever. And she did this whole kind of analysis about that. And she's written a number of kind of very helpful books about getting over, you know, relationships or being sort of living by yourself and learning to love yourself. And it's kind of almost like self-help, but from a much more personal, diaristic kind of way of writing. And she's really using her own body now through photographing herself in selfies and doing Instagram live chats, where she's really sort of taking control of the way that she is represented. And even though she isn't an artist as such, she's more of a writer and now a presenter, I guess. But I just love the way that she's approaching it all. And there is a kind of link to what you're doing with your paintings as well, I feel.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it's quite interesting. I think maybe my works will bring up lots of things that are quite broad because of the nature of them being women and because of them being nude and like Russell says, having, you know, huge breasts. And but I think the main thing for me is there's more of a psychological acceptance, even though they are women and they are nude. I guess for me they kind of break down things that are much further afield than that. If that kind of makes sense. It's kind of, you know, like you mentioned the nipples looking like bullets. And there was one painting that I made that was at the Fortnite exhibition, and it was called XXYZ Blackface Shooter. And basically I was having a really hard time because I was watching a lot of the news, and, you know, there's a lot of young black people that get killed in America, particularly men, by police force or by each other, you know, and I found it quite traumatic. And there was a rapper called XXXTentacion, I really love his music. It's highly problematic because I know, you know, there's a history there with, you know, his relationship with his partner. And anyway, he was shot dead, and it really, really got to me in a way that doesn't normally. Like, I'm not normally bothered by things like that, and it really got to me. So I kind of used that painting as a way. A friend of mine suggested I made some work about it, and I was like, how can I make work about that? You know, if I relay it directly, it's going to be so weird, and that, you know, it's not going to work. But I managed to kind of console myself through that painting. And so even though I think they are about body image, I think it's a lot to do as well with boundaries and, like, for me, maybe psychological acceptance. You know, maybe sometimes you don't want to confront things like the fact that I am a woman and I want to paint, and it is a highly male field, even though things are obviously changing now, and that I'm black and a woman, you know, all these things that I never really wanted to have to confront, but you get confronted by them, whether you like it or not, because that's how other people see you. And so I like the idea that although they have a lot of those elements in them, there's lots of other stuff going on in and amongst it that doesn't quite make sense. And yeah, to illustrate, you know, like things like police brutality through images like this, you know, it's just like, how, you know, how can I put this all together in a way that makes sense from my back catalogue of what I'm interested in? You know, and I always think, like, there's particularly something I find really fascinating is watching a lot of hip-hop music videos. I think they're absolutely incredible. And the Cardi B video, I got to remember the song, but it really reminds me of, like, a David Lynch film set. I think that, you know, that, like, an art house, I think. And that's really interesting, and maybe sometimes things get sectioned off, but there's this real interesting dialogue of dark undertones, and
They all do feel timeless as well, like almost like 60s in their kitsch kind of style, like remember the kitsch art you used to get in the 60s.
I love the 60s and the hair.
Exactly, and the clothing.
The massive platforms and the mini skirts. Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
And they have a sort of stripper culture as well to them. Like you can imagine them having a pole nearby, some of them.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing as well. I think when I first started out from watching Love and Hip Hop, like a lot of the women turned kind of musicians or whatever else they were doing. Some of them did come from backgrounds of stripping.
Cardi B did, didn't she? Was Cardi
B? But there's this whole like glamorous stripper culture and like the way they look, and it does end up translating into just the way people are in everyday life. And I think it's really interesting. And I've always loved like the 60s and 70s and just any era that's not this era, to be honest, like style-wise.
Yeah, right. And does vintage porn ever play into it? Like them images of women in the 60s and...
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely got a soft spot for like that old erotica. And it's not...
It's like Linda, you know, Linda's photography.
Yeah.
That when she draws them, takes them images, that's what I see in your work a lot.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because... That sort of like porn or erotica is very soft, and there seems to be a lot of references to like classical art and the way you set up an image. Mm-hmm. I know Lisa's talked a lot about this because of her using its references as well. But there's just something quite amazing, you know, being British and going around the V&A and the National Gallery, and you've got all these trinkets and these, you know, like types of wallpaper, and then you've got this erotica, and it kind of binds the two together of these kind of very nice luxury items or kind of kitsch items, and then these women and then, you know, the hairstyles which your everyday woman would have, but then there's this pornographic setting of like slight nudity, and that they are quite amazing, to be honest.
What is the sensuality kind of, to them, rather than being hardcore graphic, there's sensuousness as if they've been made for women by women, that sort of like that vibe.
They're very interesting images, and I think a lot of the time when it's softer like that, it's, I don't know how you relate to it, but it's whatever it brings to mind is in the eye of the beholder, if that kind of thing. I see it as a beautiful setup and like coming from the life room, women and bodies and like the wallpaper and the objects.
Mm-hmm. And I heard that you were slowly building up a collection of kind of art books that you have at your studio, I guess. And one of the artists that you mentioned was Leonora Carrington. And is there because your work's so imagined, was she someone that you particularly looked to? And who else are you collecting, you know, as part of this collection of books?
Yeah, I mean, Leonora Carrington, who I loved, and then my favourite actually of those women is kind of Leonore Finney. I don't know if you've seen her works, but so she had a great exhibition on actually at the Museum of Sex. I think that was after my show in Chicago that was on. So that was 2.5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And anyway, she makes incredible. She was considered a surrealist, though I think a lot of the women surrealists didn't actually consider themselves surrealists. I don't know. Yeah. But she painted like lots of sphinxes and women, and there was a lot of nudity in it as well. And then who else have I got? I don't know if you know the artist Lucy Stein, but I'm a huge fan of her.
Yeah.
She basically came to do a tutorial when I was studying at Brighton, and I thought it was the only decent person that they ever had come in and like show their work. And I was really like taken by her. I was, she was fantastic. And she like gave me a, what do you call it when you have someone come to your...
A crit.
My friends. Yeah, she gave me a crit, and she was just very straightforward with me. And there were these little paintings I'd done of some cones, and they were the paintings I'd liked, but all my tutors had been telling me, oh, try this, try that. And she went straight to them and she was like, this is good. And I was like, oh, you're the first person to pull out something. And I was like, oh, like, yeah. And then who I got, like,
I see a lot of the sculptor Rebecca Warren in your work because of the bulbous energy.
I actually don't know her.
Oh, you should look her up because I think it's there's a lot of that. But she's also inspired by the cartoonist Robert Crumb, R. Crumb. Do you know his work?
Yeah, I know.
So I can see his work as well. And it's like, I think there's a dialogue going on through them to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Crumb is great, you know, and he's a self-admitted pervert or strange person who sees the world through his own eyes. Mm-hmm. And no, I'm a big fan. Kind of looked at Crumb a lot as looking at David Lynch, like they interconnected
as well. Yes, totally.
For me. Yeah.
How quick are you at painting?
Yeah. Oh, I'm quite quick. Yeah, I'm very impatient. Like once I have an idea in my head, I'm like desperate to see it. So I tend to kind of just sit down and go for it. With oil paint, you know, you sometimes you just have to let the layers dry. But I think I normally make paintings in like 1 to 2 sittings.
Wow. And one at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, I have this weird thing about not finishing things when I was studying, and so now I've got like almost the opposite, like a compulsion where if I start something, I need to finish it. So I tend to
that's a good compulsion. Your dealer will be happy about that. Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you know something just isn't working, and you've got to know when to leave it.
Do you struggle with anything in it? Do you struggle with any elements of the paintings, like any features or anything that you're like, oh, I can't be bothered with this, or this is the tricky bit?
Yeah, I think there's an element to painting. Like there are parts of it that can be boring because like anything else, there's, you know, you like if you're going through a whole process of priming and laying down a colour, it's not always that fun. You're like, this is the bit I just got to get through. And then
the fun begins. But,
yeah, exactly. Like it is a labor of love, but it's kind of, for me, time evaporates. That when I'm doing it, I'm so involved that time really speeds up and you kind of like lose hours to it. And I think as well, I'm quite emotional while I'm painting. I'm trying to be a bit more, don't get so angry and worked up.
You get angry. So that's your loud hip hop rap music you're listening to. No wonder you're getting angry when you're working.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's funny. Once I was in... So the painting, actually, that was on show at Marianne Boesky, which is this figure kind of with long white hair and she's got her arm up behind her head. Mm. I went to the studio and I was in such a bad mood and I was like, I don't think I'm going to make anything in this sort of mood. And I painted that painting. I was like, what? You know? Mm-hmm. Like, out of it came this strange... Yeah,
You've mentioned David Lynch twice during this conversation. How important is film to you and why particularly Lynch?
Film is very important to me, as is reading. Like I read a lot of books. And I guess David Lynch, because when I was younger, a friend of mine showed me, I don't know if you've seen the movie Eraserhead.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's kind of about this character. I think he's married and he has a baby and this baby turns into this kind of creature and there's all these strange scenes that it turns, you know, there's a woman on stage singing and she's got a beard. And anyway, I interpreted that film as him experiencing a life event, something that everyone is familiar with, the idea of having a child for the first time. But the breakdown of it was this kind of like abstracted version of reality. And it doesn't make sense, but it makes so much sense.
Right.
And I like the idea that you can break things down and abstract them and then they don't make linear sense, but it does make sense. I think that's what a lot of looking at painting is. Things don't necessarily make sense, but you looking at it and the whole experience somehow makes something that you can't say understandable. And
it's his own language, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think David Lynch and, you know, Blue Velvet, I love that film also. Mm-hmm. And I found, you know, the character, I think her name is Isabella Rossellini. Rossellini, sorry, I'm so dyslexic with words, but just the characterization and the kind of like dark undertone. I think there's a lot of a kind of black humor to my work and just to myself as a person. One of my favorite books that I've ever read is Angela Carter, The Sadian Woman. And it's basically a breakdown of the Marquis de Sade. You know, do you know de Sade?
Tell us the story for our listeners who don't. What's the story?
Yeah, so the Marquis de Sade was kind of an aristocrat, and he was really wealthy, and he wrote all these really X-rated pornographic books that were all banned, and he kind of, I think he got put in prison and all sorts. But anyway, he wrote this book, but Angela Carter basically used the way he'd characterise women in some of his books as a way to break down how we view women today, kind of saying that he was a radical because for the first time someone was using, like, saying that women's sexuality wasn't just as a baby-making machine. So he'd kind of given them a sense of autonomy, even though, yeah, it's a really great book, and it kind of breaks down a lot of interesting things, and the focus of it is on pornography. It's
her books from the late 70s.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because she died when she was quite young, unfortunately. Well, like too young to die. But and The Bloody Chamber by her, which is a series of fairy tales which she rewrote to have strong female characters. She kind of like switched it up. The Bloody Chamber is an amazing, amazing story. And I remember we studied that when I was doing my GCSEs or A-levels. It was one of the books. And
wow.
Yeah. It's kind of saying that women can be violent, and it, you know, yeah. It's interesting. So I was talking to my granddad about one of Plato's books, and he was saying Plato believes in that women being equal, but it would also mean they had to go to war and commit acts of atrocity. You know, like there's a side to, yeah. And I think Angela Carter just has this broad view on violence beyond it just being what we think of as violence. And I think imagery is quite violent. And, you know, you were saying like we're kind of in a time at the moment where we're being given so much information on coronavirus and, like, you know, it's a kind of overload. I think it's the same with the visual world that we live in. You get so much imagery, it's hard to kind of
sift through it. Digest it in your brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've recently moved now then, and how easy do you think, or have you started already making work in the current climate, and what are you working towards in your mind? What are you projecting?
Yeah, it's quite a strange time for me anyway, I think, because I had just finished working on the show, which has kind of been, you know, it's the first time I've worked on like a body of work for about 3 years and been like, wow, that was quite momentous. So I had painted this last painting in the show called Afternoon Tea, The Weight of Silence. And it's quite funny because it was the last thing I painted and I left it and looked at it and I was like, oh, it's very reflective, the painting. I was like, I think that's sort of how I'm feeling about painting, like what's the next step? So today's kind of the first day I've actually sat down and been finally doing some drawing.
How's that going?
That's how I normally start. Yeah, it's been so nice, actually. I really felt like a sense of calm.
Good.
But, I think, yeah, just carrying on and like you said, working on some bigger paintings and, yeah, we'll see.
Are you part of a group of artists in London? Have you got like peers that you kind of will chat to about your paintings or when you're making things? Or do you work quite isolated?
I'm quite isolated, and I always kind of have been. Even when I was studying, I always found the corner of the studios and set myself up there and like have my headphones on. Like I feel quite self-conscious and don't like people to watch what I'm doing and just to kind of like get on with it.
Yeah.
But my partner studied art with me, and I'm so grateful to have him because I really get to like talk with him about a lot of things, either it's music or, you know, whatever's on my mind, and that's really helpful.
You like his reviews of your work? Is he a good crit for you?
Yeah.
He is.
Sometimes. No, he's great. He's very, you know, he says exactly what he thinks. It's helpful. Sometimes things I'm like, this is terrible, it's going in the bin, and he's like, no, it's not, and he was right and I was wrong. And then sometimes it just reaffirms, you know, if someone says they don't like something, you're like, well, I really love it, like, I don't care what you think.
Yeah, totally.
And that's quite helpful.
How do you feel about, because you, a lot of your work is being sold now because you're incredibly sought after and very you're just a brilliant artist. That's how do you feel about your work going into collectors' houses and going to collections around the world and then now sort of leaving you? Do you feel it's tough to let work go and once you've made it?
Yeah. To be honest, I'm so grateful that I'm in a position to do what I love and like that people do want to have it in their homes. And, you know, it's such a... I love it. That art is to be seen, and I think it's great if people want it and they want to live with it. And yeah, I just think I'm very lucky. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important as well. There's always this conversation about having stuff in places which are public that people can see, and that's always really important.
Institutions is your drive. That's where you want to get on the walls of museums.
Yeah, I think who doesn't want that? Who's a painter or an artist?
Yeah.
But I love the idea that, you know, these things that are, that, because when I'm painting, there can be like 20 of these paintings on the wall and they're all looking at me and it can get quite intense. So mm-hmm. I love the idea that they've kind of dispersed and gone to different places. And I wonder what other people's experiences of living with them are like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm very lucky.
I really like the leopard print theme as well that seems to be coming through in some of the newer works.
Oh yeah,
makes me think of Lil Kim a lot, and also like Cardi B, and like I don't know.
No, I love leopard print. I quite like. I don't know, but I had this leopard print dressing gown that my boyfriend absolutely hated and just thought was the worst thing in the world, and I just loved it. I think, yeah, I don't know, just drawn to certain prints, and yeah, leopard print is one of the things.
Rob loves leopard print, zebra print, animal. He's all about animal prints, aren't you, Rob?
I actually really love the Cardi B video with City Girls, where they both painted their bodies in like tiger
that
prints or whatever.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I think that's also what I was thinking about. And then Lil Kim, obviously. But when I saw, because one of your paintings, you have like leopard print kind of painted onto the woman's body
skin. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that painting's kind of, I guess, it is called Untitled, but at one point it's sort of like a transfiguration. I don't know. It's kind of, yeah.
Where do your titles come from?
A collection of places. Sometimes, I don't know, things will just come to me and I won't force a title. Like if something's not happening, it's just not going to happen. And it'll just be Untitled. But like there was a painting, What Have You Done? Leaving Party. And I think Brexit was subconsciously on my mind. And, mm-hmm. you know, just things that kind of make sense. And then XXYZ, Black Lace Shooter. That's quite literal, you know. Mm-hmm. It was concealing the name of XXXTentacion. And then XYZ being like, you know, XYZ whatever. And then Blackface and Shooter. Just, you know, they're kind of nonsensical sequences of things put together, I think, a lot of time. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, we ask every guest that comes on two very important questions. The first one is, if you could do an art heist for yourself, you could, an imaginary art heist, you could have any work of art from anywhere in the world, whatever it is, a building, a painting, a sculpture, a video, a performance, and you could have it to yourself, what would it be and why?
I think after visiting the Frick collection, I discovered the work of Thomas Gainsborough, but particularly his paintings of women, which I just think are amazing. And there's a portrait of a woman called Grace, I'm not going to say her name right, Dalrymple Elliot?
Dalrymple.
I'd have that. I'm absolutely in love with that portrait.
What's her name? Grace Dalrymple Ellis.
Elliot.
And yeah. She was a real person. He painted
she was
from
a
models.
Scottish courtesan.
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Did you know that off the top of your head, Rob? Yeah.
Yep, babes. Because you know why? Because Michael Fullerton, who I used to work with, did loads of work about Gainsborough.
Oh, right. Oh,
amazing.
Yeah, so I actually weirdly have heard about Grace Elliot before.
Yeah,
Rob,
when I read about that painting, it's funny because it was considered, you know, her cheeks looked too flush and her eyes too seductive. And I was like, obviously seduced by the painting. I loved it. And I think she was quite a character.
She was a spy. And Michael was really interested in the idea of spying and spies and politics and things like that. So I think it was during the French Revolution. And she's a really fascinating woman, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, and you kind of know Gainsborough more as a landscape painter. That's what I had thought of. So I was really thrilled to find that.
Love that.
The other question we ask every guest is, what is your favourite colour?
Ooh.
Leopard print.
Yeah, can that be a colour? it's green. Green is my favourite colour.
All right. Right.
And why green?
It's so vibrant, lively and rich and dark. I don't know, there's a lot of great tones of green. I really, yeah.
Do you
love
paint a lot with
dark
green
velvet? No, actually. The leopard print painting is very green, and then there's a big version of that that's quite green, but no, not necessarily. I think you get tones in skin colours, and sometimes I find green and brown is an interesting combination, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about Green Velvet. A, they're an amazing band, because I love the electronic music of Green Velvet. But also that idea of like landscapes and stuff. Like, I think people call grass Green Velvet sometimes.
Anyway,
but the other question we ask at the minute is, what is your secret lockdown talent, or your hidden lockdown talent, the talent you didn't realise you had until now we've been in quarantine?
I think it's probably really lame, and it's cleaning things within an inch of their life. That's
That's good.
That's a really weird, maybe it's neurosis since being locked down, I don't know.
Have you been washing your hands every 20 minutes and singing happy birthday?
No, that, like, wash my hands when I've gone out, but just like, I've been really enjoying cleaning things.
Well, that's a lovely talent.
Can
you just, does it take your mind off stuff when you're cleaning, or do you feel stressed about it? Yeah.
No, it's quite like therapeutic to just, you know, it's like going for a run in a way. You've got a goal in mind and there's a beginning, middle and end. And
I've never considered
cleaning having a beginning, middle and end, but you're right, it does.
Yeah, I mean, you probably have more interesting things to do. I've enjoyed it very much.
Can I just talk briefly on wigs, how important wigs are in your work?
You know what, again, that is another probably quite personal thing, but when I was younger, you know what it's like when you're a little girl, like, hair is just the thing, like, you just want long amazing hair. I'm obviously mixed race black and I've got wildly curly hair, so I just always wanted like long straight locks, which is awful in retrospect, and now I love my hair. But I think there's a really interesting kind of storyline that I think a lot of women with hair like mine go through, which is that you kind of chemically alter or texturize your hair so you can get it to behave in one way that it's not going to ever last as, and like wigs. And so I think it's just like a personal expression of kind of experiencing hair, and you know, particularly in like Love and Hip Hop, and a lot of celebrities actually wear amazing wigs. Mm-hmm. And then again, you know, like back to the 60s and 70s, like these crazy, like puffed up hair and curled ends, and I just think they're fantastic. And so it's also a way to kind of make the hair not about having black hair or white hair or whatever. It's supposed to be quite ridiculous, like ambiguous. Yeah, very lively.
Love. I love the wigs.
Yeah.
It's a triumph.
Yeah, I'm glad. Yeah. Also, it can be whatever colour you want, which is good.
It's the dream. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Samaya.
Thank you so much.
It's been brilliant talking to you.
It's been such a great way to spend an hour. I loved it.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great. Yeah.
For all images we were talking about today, please go to our Instagram page at Tallcut. And Samaya, are you on Instagram?
Yeah, I am. Yes.
What is your name on it?
Samaya Critchlow. Which is my name.
Very straightforward. I thought, actually, the Critchlow thing, my friend is an actress. I did a show called Being Human, and she's called Lenora Critchlow, but she doesn't have the T. And I was about to go into this whole wax lyrical about, oh, my God, there must be some sort of family connection, but no, not at all. So
No. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good name, actually, because people can't really tell where I'm from, which I find quite fun.
Yes. No, love it. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Thanks, everyone.
And we'll be back very soon.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamant and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.